It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We focus on hen-laying chickens, the journey eggs take to our refrigerator, and what labels on egg cartons really mean. The most recent USDA eggs report says Wisconsin production in August was 150 million eggs. That's up 3% from July, but down 13% from last year. And our neighbor Iowa is by far the country's leading producer. 1 billion eggs in August, for comparison's sake. But Iowa, too, their year-over-year numbers are also down. Join in on commercial egg production, 800-642-1234. Nick Westby is co-owner of Organic Pastures with about 12,000 pasture-raised chickens. The family-owned business has two farms in south-central Wisconsin in Ryo and Marcellin. Nick, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. So let's start with avian flu. As we saw, millions of chickens died this year because of bird flu. State health officials say it's the first time poultry owners have dealt with this highly contagious disease since 2015. How is your farm adapting?
Yeah, it has been a crazy up and down year here since it was like early March when bird flu first started hitting, and it actually hit Wisconsin the biggest egg producer here in Wisconsin, in early spring here. And it's been just crazy the last 6-8 months here. We obviously, like, knock on wood, we're lucky we haven't had, any issues on our farms, but just in general, the whole egg laying industry has been thrown upside down with farms all over the country. Getting bird flu and worried about bird flu, and it was really, really bad this spring, and then we kind of had a quiet summer, and now as the wild birds have started migrating back down south, we've had more and more farms get hit by bird flu again here this fall. It's nervous times for sure, but kind of just stay as safe as we possibly can and hope for the best.
I think consumers also want to know, are poultry products safe to eat with the concerns around bird flu?
Yeah, as far as eggs, there's no concern with bird flu. When farms get bird flu, the USDA comes in and they get rid of all of the chickens, clean it all out, and all the eggs that were a part of that flock are not sold to consumers. So
can you take us to your farms? What is a typical day like for your pasture raised chickens?
Yeah. So typical day is, are the lights in the barn. So we have a stationary barn, in the middle of a pasture with grass and trees and shrubs. And, so a typical day is that the lights turn on about five in the morning. And then the first 2-3 hours of the day is when they lay their eggs. So we have nesting boxes inside the barn that they lay their eggs. And then about 8-9 o'clock in the morning, we will go open up. We have like 10 doors around the outside of the barn that we open up, and then they are free to kind of go wherever they want around the farm until about sunset, and they naturally come back to the barn because we leave the lights on about an hour past sunset. So as the sun goes down, the lights in the barn stay on, so the birds will naturally go to that light, and it only takes about a week or so, and they're trained to just go in and out of that sunset and spend the rest of their the night there, and then they wake up in the morning, lay an egg, and then kind of go do whatever they want the rest of the day the next day.
Where do they like to roam around the pastures? What are their favorite areas?
They really, really like trees. So they're obviously worried about aerial predators like hawks and eagles and whatnot. And actually, it's funny, we'll see like an airplane fly overhead, and the chickens will dart for like the tall trees or the tall grass or the shrubs, or run back into the barn because they're really, really smart, and they know when there's a aerial predator around. So they don't like to stay in like open areas as much. So we actually we'll plow up or mow paths in the pasture for them to kind of get around fast. But then we try to keep a lot of it long so they can hide and feel comfortable. And yeah, they love the shade. They love like gloomy days, like even like today, a little bit of snow on the ground here and there, but they love the gloomy days because they're, when it's super bright, I think they just can't see as well up into the sky.
Nick Westby with us as we talk about the egg industry, what it takes to raise chickens in Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions about eggs, 800-642-1234. Let's discuss egg carton terminology, because we see things like natural or free range or certified organic. Can you explain how, you know, how these labels work?
Yeah, so there are, I feel like there is a, yeah, there's a bazillion different words that end up on cartons. And it's one thing that I almost think a lot of people just try to confuse the consumer with all the different jargon that's out there, from just like the commodity eggs. And then there's the cage free, there's free range, there's pasture raised organic, there's cage free organic, there's free range organic. And then certified humane, and then there's animal humane, all kinds of different terminology. It gets hard for a consumer to actually know what they're actually buying. So a commodity or like conventional white egg, they're raised in huge barns in cages, so the birds never really get to move around very much. And then cage free is basically they're all in one cage, like one just big barn, where they can definitely roam around inside, but they're always inside. They never see the light of day. And then there's free range, which is cage free plus there's basically a patio or little bit of area outside. I think it's like 2 square foot per bird is the regulation of outdoor access, which if those birds are actually going outside every day, that little bit of space would turn to mud in no time. And then there's the pasture raised, which is what we do. What we've always done is, the minimum is 108 square foot of pasture per bird. So basically about a standard sized bedroom, each chicken would get as far as space, like outside. And obviously, like depending on the day, like obviously they don't use every single bit of that pasture every single day, but we can, you keep that much space so that the chickens don't, cause they're super curious and they're going to scratch at the dirt. They're going to dig up grass and try to get bugs. And they, having that much space allows the grass to stay kind of healthy and keep growing.
Well, ultimately, you know, as the consumer, how do you know whether the eggs you're buying, usually at a higher cost, are promoting better animal welfare standards or are superior in some way to, you know, eggs that are much less cost?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I mean, I always just say is, find a brand that you can trust that is kind of transparent and puts everything out there. Like, I mean, we're super transparent on social media. I mean, there's no clip art chickens or fake chicken photos. We just take photos of the farm, of the birds out on the farm, and you can kind of see, what we do. And I think, yeah, you just have to find kind of with everything in food and just everything in general, just find the companies that are the most transparent and that you feel you can trust.
Nick Westby with us, egg farmer in Columbia County with about 12,000 pasture-raised chickens. Join in on commercial egg farms, what hens eat, grading eggs, and more, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thanks to Aaron in Eau Claire for suggesting this conversation about eggs. Aaron sent us an email saying, look, it's all so confusing with cage-free and free-range and the labels and certifications like USDA organic. Join in with your questions about egg production, regulations, labeling, treatment of hens, 800-642-1234. We have Wisconsin producer Nick Westby, has about 12,000 pasture-raised chickens and stays with us. Let's bring in Jill in Oshkosh. Hi, Jill. What would you like to bring up?
Hi. I just thought, wow, 12,000 hens, that's a lot. How long do you expect them to live? And then I was also wondering, you know, where are all the boy chickens? What happens to them?
Jill, thank you. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Yeah, 12,000 chickens, it seems like a lot between the two farms. But in the chicken farming world, we're kind of small potatoes compared. I think there's, what is there, like five, I could be wrong. I think there's like 5 million total chickens in Wisconsin. But yeah, so we actually keep our chickens for about a year and a half. And then we get them all in at one time and they all go out at the same time. And we get some roosters on the farm. And we actually like to have the roosters on the farm because we can, when they're out in the pasture, the roosters will cock-a-doodle-doodle and let the other birds know that if there's danger around and whatnot. But I know a lot of the roosters can go for get raised for meat chickens for in like the broiler industry. But yeah, so we get some roosters on the farm, but we don't get we definitely have more hens than we have roosters for sure.
Why a year and a half for laying eggs?
So what we do is that's about the time that they lay eggs. So we get them about 17 weeks old, and then they'll lay eggs for about a year and a half, and then they'll naturally stop laying eggs for a while. And what bigger farm, so our farm is certified humane. So what farms will do is they'll actually like force molt and get those chickens through that natural time that they stop laying eggs. They'll do it in about like a week or two rather than like several months where they stop laying eggs and they take feed away and they lose their feathers and then they give them feed and light again. And but we're not allowed to do that. We would never do that to our chickens. So we don't do that. So we just take all the chickens and then they go for meat in the local markets around here, and then we get a new flock in.
Okay, and so the cycle then starts all over again.
Yep. Yes. Yep.
So, talking about how you grade eggs, like grade A white eggs, they were $2.90 in September for a dozen. That's an increase of about $1.70 since June 2019. Can you explain how the grading works?
Yeah, so there's grade A, and then there's grade double A. I think there's also grade B. There's grade B, grade A, and grade double A. Everything that we do is grade A, and most of the eggs you'll find in the store are grade A. That's all basically based off of like the air pocket in the eggs, and then the quality as far as grade B, grade A, and grade double A. Like they allow for different variances in the quality of the egg as far as just like the egg itself is like the shell quality and the yolk, not like the yolk color or anything like that, but just the quality in general. But majority of the eggs you find in the store are grade A, and there are some some grade double A that you'll find, and they'll actually have the USDA shield on it, and that means that there's somebody at the egg plant at the time that those eggs were cartoned. But there's very, very, very small differences in the grade A and the grade double A.
What do you see with the price increases in the market? Why are prices going up?
It's pretty much all, I mean, it has to do, I mean, the big thing is it has to do with bird flus and all of that. I think we're up to like 44 million chickens or something like that, that have been taken out of production because of bird flu. So the supply is really, really low. And I think as we've gotten in these kind of inflationary times, a lot of customers are looking at eggs and cheaper sources of protein and realizing that they need to buy eggs. So supply, it's kind of a double whammy. It's like supply is really low and demand has gone really, really high.
Sure. The constraints there, you know, I'm wondering, people still open egg cartons to see if they have a perfect set of eggs before they put them in their basket, you know, no cracks. How do you feel about that practice?
I guess I've never really given much thought to it. I mean, I definitely understand why customers, because they're not going to want to bring home broken eggs, and then it's kind of hard to prove if they broke it or the store broke it or the farmer broke it. Yeah, I guess I've never given much thought to that as far as like food safety and whatnot.
And not in terms of food safety, but in terms of perfection, that every egg has to be just right. And that puts a lot of burden, I would imagine, on the producer, making sure that you achieve perfection.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And then we also have a lot of things out of our control as far as once they leave the farm, they go to a truck driver, picks it up, and they're in the back of a truck, and then they go to a distribution center, and then they're sent on a truck again to the grocery store, and then they're taken out of the box onto the shelf. And then, yeah, no, there's a lot of
variables.
Yeah, for sure.
Talking about the egg industry and what it takes to raise chickens in Wisconsin with Nick Westby, co-owner of Organic Pastures. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Jim from Evansville called and couldn't stay with us. And Jim said that it is illegal to use antibiotics in chickens for growth promotion. So why do egg cartons advertise free of antibiotics when most chickens already are?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's just something that it's just another one of those buzzwords that farmers have used and companies have used just to, I guess, I mean, it's more just like kind of letting because there's a lot of stuff that goes around and a lot of rumors here and there of like what goes in here. And I think it's just another way to let customers know that there's no antibiotics being used, and just to kind of let the customers feel safe, I guess, basically, that there's none of that going on.
When you say, you know, you have roughly 12,000 hens, are you using new technologies in your egg business to manage and keep on top of your egg production? Like, what have you been able to do there?
We don't really have a whole lot of technology other than in the barn we have a computer that keeps track of the temperature and regulates the fans and the water consumed and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, we really don't have a whole lot of technology. It seems like 12,000 chickens is a lot, but we're really, really tiny as far as like chicken farms go.
Sure.
We don't have a whole lot of big technology yet.
We have a question here from Sue in Poinette. Sue, go ahead.
Hi. I have received eggs from people that have their own hens at home that have a really bad fishy taste to them, and it's my understanding that it has something to do with the feed they receive. Can you tell me how I would go about avoiding that, knowing ahead of time whether it's going to taste that way?
Thank you, Sue. Nick?
So that was chickens from like backyard chickens, I think is what she said. Yeah, I think some of the, as far as like a fishy taste would go, it could be that the chickens were fed a lot of fish meal. And there's a lot of words as far as like no soy and no corn, like customers not wanting any soy or corn in their chicken feed, people have turned to fish meal, and that could be a reason why that the eggs were fishy. I guess I've never, we've never had that complaint.
What is in your chicken feed?
So we have, obviously, other than the pasture and the bugs and all that that they get outside, we have a feed inside the barn that consists of, well, so everything we do is USDA organic as well. So we have organic corn, soybean meal. So it's not like the oil, it's a soybean meal. And then alfalfa, there's some clovers in there, some wheat, kind of a bunch of different things. And then there's vitamins and minerals that are added to it too.
Nick,
vitamin D3 is the biggest thing for shell quality.
Nick, thank you so much for giving us a glimpse of your business. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Nick Westby is co-owner of Organic Pastures, about 12,000 pasture-raised chickens on farms in Columbia County. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have a listener suggestion conversation as we explore farm animal welfare and a Wisconsin sanctuary's efforts to protect animals. You can join in with your questions about animal sanctuaries and rescued farm animals, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Brenda Vetter is co-founder and director of the nonprofit called Soul Creations Farm Sanctuary in Endeavor. That's in central Wisconsin. Organization has more than 80 animals rescued from abusive or problematic conditions, providing specialized care and healing for farm animals that have nowhere else to go. Brenda, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, start us out with a bit of a tour. Give us a visual of your farm sanctuary and what is life like for these animals.
Sure, absolutely. So our sanctuary is actually located at our home. So central to our sanctuary is our house, and our attached garage is kind of grand central for everything. It's our feed room, our quarantine space for new animals coming in or animals who need special care. We have some storage in there, and volunteers stop in the garage first to check the board to see what needs to get done that day. So then to the east side of our property is the bird yard, where we have four different bird houses that we house our different groups of birds. And then to the west of the driveway, we have six different areas of housing and pastures for our four-legged groups and herds over there. So a typical day starts with a few hours of feeding and special care for the animals. We check in with everybody and see how everybody's doing. Then we spend lots of time cleaning. And there's always lots to clean and maintenance to be done, vet visits and things during the day, tours and guests come in, and then another couple hours of feeding in the evening.
So you mentioned volunteers as well, and looking at a job board. What is the role of volunteers at your sanctuary?
Well, we're a 100% volunteer-run organization, so we really rely on our volunteers to help us get everything we need to do done around here. So, I mean, our volunteers help us with feeding, with cleanup, with maintenance, and building upkeep. They do some direct animal care, like maybe brushing the donkeys or helping us with hoof care, socialization, enrichment. But, you know, by far the biggest part where we always start our volunteers is cleanup.
Are there state regulations you have to abide by to be a farm animal sanctuary here in Wisconsin?
We really follow the same rules and regulations as farms in Wisconsin, but the sanctuary community is really committed to providing like a standard of high quality care for farmed animals, similar to what you'd expect for companion animals.
How do you know when there's a farm animal that is in need of your help? Where does that information come from?
We get all kinds of requests from different sources. Oftentimes, we'll get a call or an email from a concerned individual who maybe sees an animal in need and will reach out to us for help. And sometimes we can negotiate a rescue in a situation like that. We network with other Midwest sanctuaries. So for instance, if another sanctuary gets a call for an animal that they're unable to take in, we'll talk with each other to see if someone else is able to help that animal. We get sometimes contacted by animal protection organizations to help in a situation. But probably by far the most requests we get are from individuals who are current guardians or sometimes farmers who have animals in a situation that they are unable or unwilling to take care of. So they'll call us for extra help to step in.
How often do you have to say, no, we can't take the animal?
Yeah, well, that's probably one of the hardest things about running a sanctuary is, you know, when we get calls, we have to evaluate each individual request. And, you know, we look at the need of the animal and the urgency of care that they need, the space we have available, the resources, are we going to be able to provide that animal with the urgent care they need and a lifetime care of medical care and all of their lifetime needs. So we have to really evaluate each one individually. And sadly, you know, we only have so much space and resources. So we actually have to say no more often than we can say yes. And it's really tough.
What animals are most in need of care? What do you hear, you know, as the most frequent requests?
By far, the most frequent request we get is to take in roosters. I mean, right now there's so many backyard farms raising chickens for eggs, and even in cities, they're allowing people to raise hens for eggs. But what people don't understand is when you purchase chicks from a farm store or through mail order from a hatchery, what happens is the day those chicks are born in a hatchery, they're tossed onto a conveyor belt by literally thousands, and they go quickly down the conveyor belt. And there's a person standing there picking them up and sexing them quickly. And the little females that are going to be egg layers are put in boxes to be shipped to the stores or to the people who order them. And the little males are actually killed at birth because they're of no use to the egg industry. So often, though, you know, they're going so quickly, some of those little males make it through. And inevitably, these backyard farms who are getting chickens end up with males that are either unwanted or they aren't allowed to have. Most of the cities don't allow roosters. So we are overwhelmed with calls for roosters. And when sanctuaries are overflowing with roosters and we have nowhere else to go with them, they oftentimes don't end up living through their first year.
How many roosters do you have in your care now?
Right now we have three, one in each flock.
One in each flock. Do you find that is your capacity or could you take more?
Right now it's our capacity. We have had more in the past, but it really depends on the individual roosters. Some of them will be able to work well with other roosters, and sometimes their personalities really don't allow them, you know, like Antonio is one of our newer roosters and he would absolutely not allow another rooster into his flock.
Brenda Vetter is with us, heads of farm sanctuary in Marquette County, as we talk about farm animal and a Wisconsin sanctuary working to save and protect animals. And thanks to Irene from Portage for this show suggestion. You can join in about farm animal sanctuaries, what you've encountered, what you want to know about them. 800-642-1234. Brenda, when might it be no longer humane to rehabilitate a farm animal? How do you make that type of decision?
Basically the same as your companion animals. I mean, we allow them lifelong care here. And, you know, quality of life is always our concern to make sure that they're comfortable and living their best lives. So, you know, we do take in animals with disabilities, special health care needs and things, and we give them the best medical care that we're able. But, you know, when they reach a point where they're no longer able to live their life comfortably, we would consider humane euthanasia. And we have, you know, and we definitely will. But, so it's basically the same as you would consider for your dog.
Are you able to collaborate or network with other farm animal sanctuaries like your own? And what do you do as a group?
Yes, absolutely. We always network and work with all of the Midwest sanctuaries and sometimes even further than that. We talk about standards of care and how we can give the animals in our care the best quality of life. We work with each other on large rescue situations or on local rescue situations that, you know, like when we aren't able to say yes to taking in an animal, we always reach out to our network of sanctuaries to see if somebody else is able.
how much does it cost to care for abused animals or animals that have been in really problematic situations?
It varies substantially, you know, depending on the situation, but we're a 501c3 nonprofit. So everything we do is funded by donations. And, you know, vet care and food are by far our biggest expenses. I mean, just regular routine vet care, vaccines and hoof care and vet checks and, you know, neutering and spaying animals when they come in, things like that are pretty expensive. But if we have an emergency or somebody who gets sick or hurt, we can end up with thousands of dollars of vet bills in a very quick time.
Should there be like a system where the farming industry supports these farm animal sanctuaries as like a necessary part of the animal farming economy? What would that look like to you?
Oh, gosh. I guess ultimately we'd like to see a shift away from animal farming. And, you know, we're here to support the animals and to, you know, take in the animals who really need us. But the numbers are just so large. And the sanctuary community is really pretty small at this point. We just don't have the ability to take in all the animals that possibly could need our care. I don't even know how to answer that, actually, what that would look like. But maybe, you know, a sanctuary funded group where animals in need could come in. I honestly don't know how to answer that.
Sure. Let's go to Eden now in Neosho. Eden, hi. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to thank you for having the focus on this topic. I run an animal sanctuary in Neosho, Wisconsin. We take in all domestic animals, and we specialize in senior and disabled animals. Especially with dogs, it's really heartbreaking to see all of the seniors and elderly dogs that are cast off and that need help. But with farm animals, it's the same thing with roosters. We get so many calls about roosters, and, you know, we try to pair roosters with a hen or two and sort of break up the flock, create new habitats for the roosters that come in because they are such warriors with each other. It's really a difficult problem because you can't just have them in a flock all together like people might think you do.
Yes, I would imagine. How do you, though, create those separate habitats for roosters?
Well, my husband is a carpenter type, and so we build beautiful sort of aviary-type structures for the birds with a lot of enhancements, different perches, and things for them to have during the day to make their day more interesting.
Eden, thank you for the call. Brenda, you know, as you look at how to address the rooster issue, but as well as how do you make the living conditions and the barn-like conditions right for the animal, what challenges do you see there?
The biggest challenges are space to accommodate all the requests and all the animals who really need sanctuary. But we are committed to giving each animal who does come into our sanctuary a high quality of lifelong care. So they all have plenty of space to be comfortable and move around and express their natural behaviors. You know, the pigs have big pastures where they're out digging and rooting in the mud, and the chickens are out under the bushes and pecking and, you know, being able to peck and scratch for seeds and for bugs, and the donkeys are out in a pasture where they can move around and romp and play. So we try to make it as close to their natural setting as possible, you know, within the confines of a sanctuary, and make sure that everybody has enough space in all of their houses to be comfortable and has a herd to be with and a family to be with, things like that, to make sure that they're living their best lives.
Brenda Vetter leads a nonprofit farm animal sanctuary in Marquette County, serving as a resource for farm animal abandonment and special needs situations. Join in on the work of farm animal sanctuaries around our state. Perhaps you're involved in one. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent as we explore the work of sanctuaries that focus on helping farm animals that have been abandoned, have been abused, neglected, or on a farm that can no longer care for the animal. Brenda Vetter formed her nonprofit sanctuary 5 years ago. Join in on this work, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And Brenda stays with us. Brenda, let's talk about CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations that can have thousands of animals on a CAFO, and some might live in cages too small for them to move around. How does limiting movement affect a farm animal's behavior?
Just like it would any other animal, if you can imagine a dog kept in a cage his entire life where he can't even turn around and he can't run, he can't play, he can only lay down and stand up. If you can imagine the stress and anxiety they would experience, there's mother pigs who are in gestation crates so small that they literally can only stand up and lay down, and they spend their entire life, which is maybe up to 3 years, trapped in that cage the entire time, you know. And there's the battery cages where they raise hens for laying eggs that are so small they never get to flap their wings or to see daylight. It's just so stressful that really the animals can like go crazy or suffer severe depression, just like you or I or a dog would.
What transformations do you observe on your farm when you take in animals and you observe their emotional or their physical changes?
It's really incredible. And each individual animal will experience life differently. And depending on their personality and their history, you know, some of them come in and they immediately recognize the situation and are so grateful and so craving that love and affection that they've been missing their entire life, that they automatically, you know, bond to us and are just so grateful and so wonderful. And others are really afraid, and it takes a long time for them to learn how to trust again and how to believe that humans can be good. You know, we take it really slow. We do, you know, we go at their own pace and at their own needs, and lots of kindness, consistency, and care. And eventually almost all of them will warm up to us. There's going to be a few that just don't ever want our love and attention. And we allow that to happen too.
Let's take another call now. Sandy is with us in Eau Claire. Sandy, hi. What's coming up for you?
Oh, hi, good morning. Say, yes, my husband and I are currently building a home and a barn area with the intention of coming up with a small sanctuary outside of Eau Claire. And we really, our focus at first was really donkeys, smaller size, or the miniature donkeys. And we just are curious as to how to, you know, or other animals, how you find and obtain the animals that are in need of such a place.
Sandy, thank you. And so what would you suggest, Brenda, as Sandy starts up her own sanctuary focused on donkeys?
I think probably your best way to start connecting is to contact some of us in other sanctuaries. Like I said, we get so many calls that we're unable to take in. So, you know, if you give us a call and we can talk with you and help you get set up for what you might need and help you understand what really goes into running a sanctuary, and then we can let you know if we get a call for a donkey that we're not able to take, we can send them your way.
Sandy, thank you for that. Charmaine now in Burlington. Charmaine, what's on your mind?
Well, I was saying I just got back from Oahu and they have chickens that are wild. They're just wandering all over the place in people's yards, and there's roosters, and they have no problem with them. And I was staying in a neighborhood, so I would go out for walks. They didn't bother me, and the people weren't bothering them. I just feel that maybe Wisconsin's not the best place for it because we do get cold in the wintertime, but maybe states that are warm all year round, why can't they just have chickens be wild if there's, you know, there's no place for them on the farm anymore, you know, and they eat a lot of bugs and stuff. So it might be a good thing.
Charmaine, thank you. Brenda, you know, Charmaine looking like, you know what, why not loosen those regulations and allow them, you know, to roam in communities?
I have heard that about Hawaii, and it sounds amazing. And like she said, I mean, Wisconsin wouldn't be ideal for chickens to roam free. It's too cold for them to be out all year in all weather conditions. They need shelter and they need care. And that would be true in any place, really. If we're being responsible, we would need to offer them shelter and make sure they have enough food and water that they're able to care for themselves. But, and I don't know how people would respond to chickens running wild that we're not used to in the States. So, but I mean, I would love to see more chickens, you know, living their lives and being out there, but they're not used to being out in nature like they used to be. They've all been domesticated to the point where they need protection from predators and the weather and assistance with food and water and things.
Brenda Vetter with us heads a farm animal sanctuary in Marquette County. You can join in 800-642-1234. Brenda, how can people help farmers adopt more meaningful animal welfare practices? What if someone wants to look for more proactive solutions? What would you suggest?
I mean, ultimately, we'd like to see a shift away from farming animals altogether. And, you know, a global shift towards plant-based agriculture is our ultimate goal. But obviously, we're not there yet. So I think first we need to have some transparency and education in animal agriculture so people understand what's really happening for animals and they can make conscious choices. And, you know, small family farmers, you know, they need to recognize that each animal is an individual and give them the quality of care and life that they deserve. You know, space, a family and a herd to live with, sunshine, fresh air, health care, healthy food, freedom from pain, and really just kind and compassion. People need to understand that farm animals are no different than your companion animals in all the ways that matter.
They're also trying to run a business at the same time and keep their operations from, you know, free of bankruptcy and to make a profit that they can live on. I mean, there are tensions there in order to be able to make your farm operation, something you can live off of.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, the care of the animals is what suffers. You know, I know that it's a balance between that profit and the products, but animals shouldn't be seen as products. They're individual living sentient beings. I mean, I guess we just don't see them as products for profit, unfortunately.
Brenda, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Brenda Vetter is co-founder and director of Soul Creations Farm Sanctuary in Endeavor, Wisconsin, the nonprofit home to more than 80 animals that have been rescued from abusive and unfortunate situations. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.